This is Edwin O'Shea, and this audio file is a companion to reading section 0.1 of the text for Calculus 235. So let's start with talking about a function. So very informally, a function has a collection of inputs that you're allowed to put into the function, and then a collection of outputs that result from putting the inputs in through the function. Now we call the set of inputs a domain and the set of outputs the range of the function. So for example, if we have f of x equal to x squared, well then the set of allowable x's that you're allowed to put in is any real number. For example, if you put 3 in, that's allowed. You're allowed to put in negative 7, you're allowed to put in a half, you're allowed to put in pi, you're allowed to put in square root of 2, etc., etc. You are not allowed to put in a cat, for example, into this function, because a cat is not a real number, nor are you allowed to put in a dress or a book or whatever else you're having, right? So attached to each function is this kind of well-defined set of things that you're allowed to put into it. And of course, what results then from putting things like 3, negative 7, and a half through this function are 9, 49, and a quarter, respectively. And that's the and those are all members of what's called the range, right? Or the set of targets, or the set of outputs that come from your allowed collection of inputs. In other words, the domain. Now, the key part of definition one would really be this idea that to every input, you can only have one output. You're not allowed to have more than one output. So, kind of, you know, in informal terms, we say things like, you can't be in two places at the same time. We could be, that's kind of a nice way of thinking about a function, that you can't map one person to two different places. All right, so some other examples. So when you look ahead to, say, exercise 16, you see that the domain and range does not have to be just the set of real numbers, right? It can be, you know, in the case of question 16, it's the collection of people in the United States. To give another example of maybe, you know, a function would be, say, for example, people to their natural birth mothers. Right, that's a collection, that's a well-defined function. The set of inputs are, you know, all people in the world, and the set of outputs are the collection of women who have given birth. And that's a perfectly valid function if you think about it for a while. What's not a function is if your domain was the collection of birth mothers and your range was the collection of children. Because it's possible for each mother to be the mother of more than one child. So that's not a function. So that's something nice to think about. Other examples of things that are not functions is that we're used to thinking of, say, like, if somebody asks you, say, the square root of 9, you might say, well, it's plus 3 or minus 3, right? In order for the square root to be a function, we're going to insist that you either pick, well, the positive square root of 9 or the negative square root of 9, and to do that in a very consistent way. All right, typically we're always going to pick the positive root when talking about square roots. But again, that's an example of a function, it's an example of something that's not a function if you were to take 9 and say, well, its square root is plus or minus 3, because you're taking 9 as an input and you're mapping it to two different outputs, namely plus 3 or minus 3. Okay. Now, there's also another type of function called a one-to-one function. And a one-to-one function is basically, it's a function, but you also have this extra condition that no two inputs are mapped to the same output. I'll repeat that again. No two inputs are mapped to the same output. So, for example, if you were to take x going to x squared, that is not a one-to-one function, because you could have two inputs, like negative 3 and 3, and they are both mapped to 9 under the function x going to x squared. So that's an example of something that's, you know, x going to x squared is a perfectly fine function, but it is not 1 to 1. Not 1 to 1. Okay, let me say a little bit more now about... Oh, I want to mention one more thing about the reading in particular. And it's the idea of a graph of a function. Now, it might take a little bit of time to see this, but you have what's called the vertical line test. And that's for a function. It says that every input is paired with only one output. And if you think about that for a little bit of time, you'll see that you need that to occur in order to have, that you need the vertical line test in order for something that looks like a curve to be a function. And you can look carefully at the images on, it's the bottom of page 4 in my text, what looks like page 4. You'll see different things, different graphs that are functions, but functions, and different graphs that are not functions. Okay. And then you also have what's called the horizontal line test attached to one-to-one functions. For now, we're going to ignore what comes in the last part of that chapter on the average rate of change. We're just going to ignore it, but we will come back to it. It'll be very nice. And now let me maybe pick out a few highlights from the exercises. So if we look at 1C, you're asked true false if f of x equal to 1 is a one-to-one function. Now that's just a little bit of wordplay. Remember, the definition of one-to-one says that for every input, given any two inputs, no two inputs are mapped to the same output. But here you have f of x equal to 1. That's just a little wordplay there, right? It's trying to trick you into thinking that one-to-one functions are things that map everything to 1. That's not the case, right? Okay. Question 2b, an example of something that's not defined with an equation, a function that's not defined with an equation. Refer back to our earlier discussion of mothers going to children. Another example would be ask a child what their favorite color is. That function takes a set of children to their favorite color. Question 16 is a peach as well along these lines. Let me jump ahead as well to 38. So with 38, you should maybe be a little bit careful. And so you have the square root of 1 over x squared minus 4. So multiply the 4 above and below by x squared. And then underneath the square root, you have a fraction. You have a numerator of 1 minus 4x squared and a denominator of x squared. So in short, you have 1 minus 4x squared divided by x squared. And now once you've written this problem as a square root of a fraction, then go back to look at example 5. And example 5 will be very helpful in helping you find the domain of that function. And last but not least, on questions 48 through 50, these might be a little bit new as well. Let's talk about 49 in particular. I'm worried that people may not have seen this notation before. It's what's called a multi-part function, sometimes a step function. So in the case of 49, so what it's saying, I just want to parse what this function is saying. It's saying that if x is less than or equal to 0, if your input is less than or equal to 0, then your output should be 3 times the input plus 1. Otherwise, if your input is greater than 0 but less than or equal to 1, then it's saying your output should be 4. And finally, if your input, namely the x, is greater than 1, then your output should be the input cubed, namely x cubed. So the way to graph this function is to be very cognizant of having one rule when the x value is less than or equal to 0, having another rule when the x value is greater than 0 but less than or equal to 1, and then having a third rule for when the x value is greater than 1. And then just draw your graphs then accordingly, depending on where your input is. Okay, I'll stop at that. This concludes a short, informal guide for section 1. Enjoy the reading. See you in class. Goodbye.